Fridays on the Mark Steiner Show, we like to bring you a mix of new segments and important shows from our archives. With a discussion about the transformation taking place around Baltimore's Station North Arts and Entertainment District, still brewing, here's an encore presentation of a show we produced this summer with the City Paper in July 2013. Can Station North save Baltimore City? We have this in the studio, the man who wrote the piece for the City Paper, Baynard Woods. Good to see you, Baynard.
Thanks, Mark.
Good to have you here. Jude Lombardi is back with us. Political activist and filmmaker with the Gentrification Not K-N-O-T.
You got it.
Project. Good to have you always back in the studio.
Kate always
Katib,
a pleasure.
Member of Red M's Workers Cooperative. Michelle Antoinette, a.k.a. Love the Poet, spoken word artist, musician who's in the community and has lots to say about many things. Good to have you here with us. And Ben Stone, Executive Director of Station North Arts and Entertainment Incorporated. Ben, good to see you here.
Good to see you, too.
And this is a first, not the first. We've had a number of these conversations. We're going to have many more over the coming months around Station North Arts. Kevin Brown, who owns the great cafe down there, Station North Arts Cafe, didn't want to be here today. He couldn't join us because he had another meeting, but he'll be here in subsequent shows. We want to get people like Dale Hargrave, who's not in the studio today. He needs to be on the show because he represents the historic community that lives there. The African-American community has been there forever. And those are the voices that have to be heard. But we're just beginning our panels, and welcome. Good to have you all in the studio.
Thanks.
So when I read the article, Baynard, I was struck by a number of things. First of all, it was a good piece. I think you covered the bases that have to get covered because the two looming questions here I think that you raised and let you talk about them for a minute, how you approached them and what you thought. A was the question of what happens with the African-American community that has already lives in Greenmount West and other parts of that community historically. And when you start these projects, will artists and working people be able to afford to live there?
Right. I mean, I think that what Charlie Duff said that was really summed it up, that the two things that the area is really struggling against are disinvestment and investment.
That was one of the lines in your article. Right?
And you're really stuck between those of, like Dale's brother saying that he can't get homeowner's insurance with a vacant beside him. So you're in
right.
trouble there if you don't have investment. But then if too much investment comes in, you get priced out.
These are the issues. I mean, so I think that and one of the things that also struck me about the piece, and I'm just one of the people who was quoted in the piece is somebody who I know and respect a great deal. I know was consulting with Deutsch. Tony Hawkins is somebody I've known since I was just disclaimer since we were both like 13 years old, and I love him as a brother, and so I also know he's a very decent human being. But I say that only because when I read all the developers that are working on these projects in Station North Arts at the moment, all the developers are white. Are there any black developers in the middle of the project? Is there any black business part of the millions of dollars that are going into this, developing any of the houses or buildings?
Well, yes, absolutely.
Who are they?
Well, Tony Hawkins.
Well, no, but as I said, I love Tony, and he's a brother, literally a brother. I mean, we would die for one another. We're that close. Our kids are like his kids are my kids are his kids, so I've known Tony forever. So I'm not saying anything bad about Tony Hawkins or any of those folks. Tony's working with Deutsch. Deutsch is a white-owned group. Is there any black-owned group that is part of developing Station North Arts?
It's Ernst Valerie, who's opening the Chesapeake this Friday.
But I mean, in terms of the larger development, I mean, is any of the money in this development process, are any of the developers African-American developers?
Well, he's a developer, and he's African-American.
But you know what I'm saying? And I'm going to put you on the defensive. It's not you, but I'm just anybody that I'm looking at.
Well, it's an excellent question. And I think that one of the events that's in the film, Gentrification Not Project, K-N-O-T, as you pointed out, is an interview at 12-12-12 that we did an event on 12-12-12 where there was a representative, I think Reverend Jack Sharp, who is a white man.
Who's been on the show before, who helped
stadium.
Develop the Greenmount,
exactly.
the stadium place.
All right. So, and he talked about that one of the things they did was become a development organization themselves, and I think that this is an important issue that is one of the things that could be really useful in regard to the moving forward without gentrification in Station North would be to look at ways in which people can begin to organize around the residents of that neighborhood and others, but particularly the residents, in forming a development organization.
And what I meant by that, and really, I mean, I think that the work that folks like you're doing and others are, is really good work. What I'm suggesting here, because this is above your pay grade, or anybody's pay grade in this room, really. But that is part of it. I mean, because people who own property, for the most part, in our communities, are white, are not African American, who own large pieces of property. That people who own houses, housing in this town, are primarily white. So the question is, how do you equalize that? How do you make this a place where people who are in business, who are African American, who do know how to invest in houses, who do know how to rehab places, are part of the process from the ground up and not ancillary to it? That's the question. How do you do that?
I have a question about that. Is it on purpose, is my question. Is there an interest for these developers to want to come in there, into the area, and develop, you know, the African-American developers? Is there a secret meeting happening where they're like, we're not going to let people know that we're doing this, and only certain people are being allowed to bid on these things? Or is it, I'm just wondering if there's a general interest across the board, or are people being malicious and saying, no, African-American developers cannot develop here?
Well, I'm just curious what people think. I have my point of view about that, but I'll wait a second.
Well, I actually think that things are much better off than maybe
the
way you're putting this. And it's an interesting dichotomy to set up that all the developers are white and people in the neighborhood are black, which is not entirely true. And even if it were true, I think what we've created in Station North is a rather level playing field in that, in the sense that every developer in the neighborhood knows that they need to work with everyone in the community, and everyone in the community knows that their voice is heard with the developers. And I don't think we've really seen development that hasn't been supported by the community so far in Station North.
That could be very true.
I would disagree with that.
The reason I've raised questions I raised that way is because after 20 years of watching this, I have, a fairly jaundiced view of how I've seen development happen in this city. And so I come from that point of view. You know what I'm saying?
And I absolutely do, too. And I work for the city on development projects all around the city. And I think we're the anomaly rather than the norm in Baltimore.
I want to see that. That's good. Jude.
I want to see it as well. What are the structures in Station North that allow for participation by all, which is one of the things the research indicates is a must if you're going to generate revitalization without gentrification? So I want to know what those structures are that allow for inclusion.
One of the things that was in your article, though, that Tony Hawkins did say was that, you know, and other people, and the other guy who owns the Copycat and some other places, are that they want to lock in certain rents for artists over a 50-year period so they can be affordable, which is a very huge step forward, which you never hear anybody else do. I think that's a very positive step. That wasn't your piece.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, well, Charlie wanted to put Lankford, who owns the Copycat, wanted to create a trust that would manage it in his absence so that developers who weren't interested in the community couldn't come in and turn it into giant condos or something like that. But that doesn't have... That's more of the artist being priced out issue rather than the community.
These are all the concomitant issues. I think they all kind of fit together right. In where they're going. And just what you were saying a minute ago, Michelle. I mean, I'm not a believer in conspiracies. I don't think people sit around going, okay, let's figure out how to cut people out. Mm-hmm. I think it's more a case of
reaching out. Maybe
people relate to the worlds they're in.
Correct. Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so people relate. If you're a person of means and your world is mostly white and wealthy,
right,
that's the world you relate to, and that's who you know.
Right. And that's what I was saying. Is it a situation where it's like, okay, I'm talking to my friends here or my people here in this network, and it doesn't necessarily spill over. So my question is, are we working towards getting people motivated to not be so cliquish, for lack of a better term?
But I think there's a...
Kate Khatib.
There's an interesting distinction, right? Because on the one hand, we're talking about where is the money coming from, right? We're talking about the development interests. And then on the other hand, there's the question of community control. There's the question of who are the businesses that are coming in? What are those businesses going to do? Who is their clientele going to be? And while I don't think those are issues that can be divorced from each other, I do think that we might need to kind of tackle them separately. So this question of where is the money coming from? Are there developers from the African-American community who would like to have an interest in Station North, who could bring an interest to Station North? I think that's a fantastic question. I don't know the answer to it.
And so we have to take a short break. When we come back, I just want to start with Ben Stone and talk about from your perspective, the vision for Station North Arts and what the overarching vision is and where we want to take all this.
Don't want them Bullweevil blues, but Huey Blake knows how to write it and knows how to sing it. He was born on this day, 1883, in our own hometown. Stay with us. One of the men who invented ragtime, Huey Blake's classical rag, Huey Blake, celebrating him today on his birthday, born 1883.
We are once again talking about Station North Arts, which we'll be doing a lot over the coming months. Has a lot of potential excitement about it in terms of the kind of place it could be. With the Maryland Film Festival buying, creating a building there that could be just amazing. And Jed Dietz, I think, does great work. It's good to see that happening over there. Downtown, Kevin Brown has got his cafe and is going to try to make it a bigger cafe.
I love that. My name is Love the Poet, and I support that cafe.
It's a great cafe. I love Kevin. And there's a lot going on there. I mean, I think that there are some really good people in that community doing good work. I think Buzz Cusack and the folks at Charles Theater are just completely community-involved people, so I think there's a real potential here to get it done right. But I think to get it done right is what the conversation has to be. And so we're here with, you just heard, Michelle Antoinette, a.k.a. Love the Poet. We're here with Kay Katib, member of the Red Emma's Workers' Co-op, Jude Lombardi, who is political activist and filmmaker with Gentrification Not Project, Maynard Woods, senior editor of the City Paper, who wrote the article that got today's conversation started, Can Station North Save the City?, and Ben Stone, executive director of Station North Arts and Entertainment Incorporated. So, Ben, talk about the vision.
Sure. Well, I guess it's important to say that the vision is not my vision.
No.
And we're part of a very large ecosystem involving neighbor associations, the Central Baltimore Partnership, which is a large umbrella group that's important to acknowledge in this discussion. And I think a big part of the vision is to have these kinds of conversations now. And I'll take a little bit of credit for starting this conversation also. We ran a conference a few weeks ago on artists and neighborhood change in Station North. It was a national conference sponsored by the Cerna Foundation. And the real reason for doing that was to have this conversation before everyone's been moved out and we're all sitting around somewhere else complaining about what happened and, you know, all the missed opportunities in Station North. And I think one thing we can all agree on, we were talking before we came on the air, is that we're at a point now where we can really affect the way things happen over the next few years. So I think that's a big part of the vision, is to have the most kind of horizontal development we could possibly have, make sure there's as much buy-in as possible from everyone who's been in the neighborhood for generations, been there for a year, been there for 3 weeks, and to make sure everyone's as involved as possible.
Let's go to the phones. Alfred in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well.
I think one of the things that we all need to be honest about is that as Station North grows, it's going to grow in the square footage prices. And what I mean by that is if it ever turns out to be similar to Federal Hill and Canton and places like that, a certain amount of people are going to be there and a certain amount of people are not going to be there. We just need to be honest about that. And if you're going to try to bring a certain look with restaurants and not condominiums right away, that square footage price is going to knock a lot of people out of the ballpark. As it grows, we just need to be honest that a lot of people are going to have to go if you're going to grow it in a certain kind of way. Doesn't mean that you don't like African-Americans or you don't like Hispanics, but if you're trying to grow an area and you know in your heart that the square footage prices is not going to be conducive for a certain segment of the population, just like what we're doing over by John Hopkins and like we've done over the last 15, 20 years in Fells Point and Canton, it's just what's so. And let's just be honest about it and go on and do it and then go from there.
Well, let's talk about that. Is that what has to be? What would be the economic plan or the other kind of or the inclusion plan that would make that different? Let me start, Ben. You look like you're about to jump to the microphone. I'll let you start.
I'll start with saying that this is not new. Station North's been around for 11 years now, and really no one has been displaced so far, and that's an important point to make. And there's a great report on University of Pennsylvania's website, Social Impact for the Arts Project, by Susan Seifert and Mark Stern, that's really looked at this and other arts districts around the country and really has said that we stand out as a district that's been inclusive and has not displaced anyone yet. So I don't know what will happen in the future. No one can predict the future, but we've been around for 11 years and this hasn't happened yet, so it doesn't necessarily have to happen in the future.
So the question is, how do we think it can not happen? What are the ways that it can be different? How can you have, like this example, I'll throw it, anybody can jump in here. How can you have somebody who makes, let's say, $25,000 a year, $35,000 a year, who lives in Greenmount West right now, and they're rehabbing houses next to this person's house, and those houses are going to have a ton of money thrown into them, and then they want to raise the property tax on the houses? Do you have a system where property taxes in different houses are different so people can stay in them? I mean, how do you do it so that you actually have a mixed income neighborhood where young professionals, artists move in, black folks who have been living there before live there, and you actually have an interracial artistic community in that? How do you make that happen? How do you ensure that?
Well, you do have the homesteader tax credits that enable people who were somewhere prior before property values raised to that their tax levels will be fixed at a certain rate. So you, in effect, do have two different levels. And I mean, it is a novel situation in some ways because the neighborhoods that he mentioned were white neighborhoods to start with. And so it was a class difference of people getting priced out often. But in Canton and Federal Hill and Fells Point and Hamden, all of those were the sort of industrial white neighborhoods that people were fleeing, had left because of industrial decline anyway. So it's a really interesting situation, and that so many people from the city and the development, you know, I was surprised that how many people in the development community were actually interested in addressing the question, which I think is a start, at least.
I think also very early on you introduce structures that increase community control and increase the value of the community control, the monetary value. So you start to think about things like land trusts. You start to think about things like participatory budgeting structures. You start to make sure that residents have a stake and a say in what development interests come into the neighborhood. And I think in doing that, you help to level the playing field. You help to make it the case that people are able to make smart choices for the neighborhood that help to develop and help to revitalize, but don't displace.
Go ahead, Jude.
Intention and care. What is our intention, and do you care? Do the developers care? Does everyone care? And not only do the residents need to be involved, but they need to be central. They're the ones that need to be saying what they desire. The people who live and have lived for years, if not decades in that neighborhood, as well as people that own properties, businesses, etc., and homes in that neighborhood. And I can tell you there are residents in Station North who are afraid that they will be displaced. Now, they've said that to me. Directly. I don't know if they've said it. So there is that fear, but it is the residents and what they desire that need to be guiding us as we move forward. But if we don't care, and if it's not our intention, it will not happen.
But I think what we're starting, though, here is in some ways because of groups like the Station North Arts and Entertainment and others I know who are involved in this project, the goodwill to make this work right is there. So that what I'm pushing is how do we make sure that it is there, that actually happens, that people, because we keep talking about having livable neighborhoods that are mixed income, interracial, and how you get to that place, how you make sure that is what's going to be created here so that, well, just, you know, that to me is kind of core to yeah. all of this.
To me, it's fascinating that this is the problem is, you know, really the great success of this at some level is that in a neighborhood that between 1950 and 1990, its population was more than cut in half. That now we're worried about too many people coming back and too much. I mean, that's not a bad problem to be having to address. It's a problem to have to address, but it's a lot better than another 50% of the people fleeing the area.
As an artist and a public speaker and a poet in the area, I think when we're talking about something as large as this, like we have big, grand answers about how to make things work, but in my mind, I want to talk about, like, the small steps that it takes to include people. What do you do? Do you send out a letter? Do you go door to door? Do you make forums so artists who are in the area, not just visual artists, because visual artists do a lot of things like murals and things visually around the city.
But you can see.
That you can see, obviously. That you can see, but you might not completely understand.
Right, right.
But, you know, but then you have a whole nother group of artists who are performance artists who can go and bring things like plays or bring things like just speaking to the people in a way that we speak to the people. I mean, we are a very viable resource because we know how to talk directly to the people. So how do we employ that as a means to getting people to know what's going on in their community? I know one of the things that I saw when I just did the Romeo and Juliet play in Area 405 were the people in the neighborhood stopping. It was a free piece. And they were stopping and they were trying to understand what was going on. And that was a way for us right then and there to reach them. Even if we had like a little flyer or something from somebody who's like, this is what's going on in your community. You know?
Right. No, absolutely. Because to reach the people themselves.
Exactly. Because that's the only way you're going to do it. We could talk around them all day. But the only real way to do anything is to walk up to somebody and say, hey, listen, this is what's going on. And this is where we're meeting to talk about
it. So maybe one of the things to think about, let me go to the phones here. One of the things that can create a conversation about Station North Arts and where to go. Maybe Station North Arts and some of the funding it has from Deutsch and other places should put some of that money aside to hire one or two community organizers whose job it is to bring the community into the conversation.
Absolutely.
Because you have this potential here. Think about the neighborhood you have. You're going all the way to Greenmount Avenue. You're going up Charles Street. You've got Little Korea and all the Korean businesses and Korean people who live in that community. You've got the historic black community lives there. You've got all the young artists who are living in that community, black and white, all around that area. It's got the potential to be something very special and very different, you know, than other places. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a beauty in the power of the potential power of what this could be.
I'd just like to make one comment in the sense of one of the letters to the editor in response to the article that was written
at the City
about
paper.
Station North was a gentleman from the Entertainment Art District in Highland Town. And they talked about their desires to figure out how to use art to create positive interactions between residents of that district. Now, I would like to go a step further and suggest what I would want to see is how the arts is creating positive interactions between residents and other players in the district, including developers, politicians, and those nonprofit organizations that often represent the positions of the developers and others in that neighborhood. I think that ties right in to...
Absolutely, absolutely.
I want to get to the phone, too, unless somebody wants to jump in a real quick comment.
I was going to say really quickly, our Open Walls mural project was designed to do exactly that, and I think it was pretty successful in that we...
But it doesn't involve the residents.
Let me finish.
We painted a bunch of murals. It was a rather inexpensive project compared to large development projects, and people came out. They noticed what was going on. We had conversations. We now have many more people attending meetings, and I always tell people that it's hard to get people to come out to a meeting when you're talking about a hypothetical large development project. But when you paint something on a wall that someone doesn't like, they're going to come out and tell you about it. And that's a great hook to get them to then engage more.
Absolutely.
The next step.
Like that, like the wonderful sculpture that sits in front of the Penn Station. But we'll talk about that another day.
Oh, yeah, that one. Don't get me started.
Oh, we had shows about that years ago when it was first put up. So we'll leave that there. Betty, you're on the air.
Okay, so I just, first of all, want to say there are some incredibly great ideas that people have been putting forward, and I actually don't have a whole lot to add because all the ideas are percolating, but I do want to say from the experience that we had in Middle East, north of Hopkins, there has to be an organized process where there's door knocking, and some people have mentioned that, where residents are brought together in a community building process first. And the arts would be a great way to do that. And then to let people, to include people as a part of the process, because otherwise people who are renters, for example, are going to move because they're going to either be kicked out by their landlord who's going to sell the building. So you want to build those community connections with people who are the least visible to the broader developer. And there has to be a way to build some community power also to be a part of the process with the developers, because once those market forces come in, they take over, and then the train has left the station. So to me, there's probably a need for two or three community organizers right now that starts the community building / organizing. Plus, the more you have a way for people to be involved, the more you will learn about what are the unseen things that are happening on blocks, who's buying up property right now, that who's coming in external to the developers and buying up property and trying to reshape the neighborhood without a community voice. So those are just my comments, but I think it's a great show, and I kudos to everybody who's made a contribution to the conversation.
Betty, thank you.
when I was a senior in college in 2003, I interned with an organization called Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development.
Yeah, Build.
Build.
Right, right.
And we did, and I learned the different aspects to community organization and organizing. And an idea that came to my mind, Kate, was the building, 2640, the church. And one way that we did get to the residents in the area and get them to want to learn how to be homeowners, and because they were building the low income homeowners project, and were the churches. We were always meeting in the churches, and even though that is a community arts performance space, that can be used. It's a huge space. It can be used to have meetings, and people can come in and even just passive programming, handing them pamphlets or something that they can pick up from outside. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, one of the reasons that we started the 2640 project, which is in which is actually in Charles Village, one of the reasons we started that project as a partnership between Red Emma's and the St. John's United Methodist Congregation is to provide a space that could be used for organizing, to provide a space that could be used for conversations. Mm-hmm. And that is a big part of what Emma's does. Even in our old space in Mount Vernon, it was one of the things that was amazing about that space was the fact that it was common ground. It was a place where you could come in and see somebody sitting at a table working on a $2,000 laptop and somebody who didn't have a home coming in and sitting at the same table and waiting for access to the computers. And they'd talk to each other and they'd become friends. And there were organizing projects that grew out of having that space for people to come together on a kind of common footing. And I think that's something that there's a desire to create in Station North from a variety of people, Emma's included. I also think that Betty is absolutely spot on, and what we have to remember is that participatory development and this kind of scale is something that takes a long time to get to. It's a long process, and we have to understand that there's an organizing process that we're going to have to go through to get to it, and it's going to take a lot of commitment, and it's going to take a lot of time and energy and devotion and care. You know, I think that there are some really great places to start. I think one thing that is an absolutely essential part of the Station North landscape is the J. Van Story Branch building. It's right behind the North Avenue Market. In fact, it occupies a parcel of land that was originally a part of the North Avenue Market. It's public housing. It's mixed senior housing,
right,
and low income. That's an absolutely vital part of Station North. It's right in the middle of it. It's the tallest building in the area, and it's something we absolutely need to be talking about and thinking about and talking to the residents. And that's something that we've been trying to do informally.
I mean, one of the things here that as a real possibility is that when you talk about residents is also the many, so many layers to this we'll cover in the coming months and weeks, and hope and do some town meetings in Station North Arts, which we want to go down and just have conversations with people and tell stories, which I think we have to do, is that, you know, it's the potential to change things. If the community residents who live there now and live there for a long time, working class people could end up having jobs in some of the institutions that exist around Station North Arts, which keeps people employed. And I know Red Emma's is working on that idea and for their own group. And so, I mean, that's one thing. I think that could be held on. Also, there's a controversy built around that we want to get into a little bit with people. We won't get too deeply today around the Green Mountain School, which is one of the best schools in Baltimore City and for elementary school kids, the Montessori School, incredible school.
The charter school.
But the question that I think needs to be raised is, should it become a community charter school so that the residents who live in that community can put their kids into a Montessori school, remembering that Montessori started his schools for poor working class people, not wealthy people. The whole idea of it was supposed to be to educate working class kids. So, I mean, there are all kinds of conversations to have that really
absolutely
to strengthen that don't, you know, that I don't see, and I don't see this necessarily as being adversarial so much as being inclusionary and how you make the whole process inclusionary.
Mm-hmm.
No, that was the spirit of this. So I wanted to make clear about that. Let me go back to the phones. Bonnie, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hey, Dr. Judith. Shout out to Dr. Judith Lombardi. I totally agree with your last caller who was talking about the runners in the Station North being worried about being priced out. I live in Station North, and I'm closer to Green Mountain North Avenue, and I'm also running in an apartment building. And with the Hopkins plan, I had to get a hold of the plan and read it and study it to make sure my building wasn't, in fact, going to be sold. In fact, they're building all the way around me. And if that community organizing job ever pops up, I'm definitely interested.
All right. Bonnie, thank you.
Transparency.
Yeah, that's what we have to have. I mean, where do you want to go next with this piece? You're going to continue looking at it?
We are. I mean, I had to cut so much out. It had to be sort of limited to, and it is, I was sort of credited, but Ben was right. It was because of this conference that they held. The chicken box opened up. The report from University of Pennsylvania came out. There's a lot of conversation already going on, and I just tried to figure out how to map the conversation a little bit. But there's a huge amount to do, and talking to in the high-rise public housing there, talking to residents there, and a number of people were suspicious to talk to me on the record as part of what the situation was, which I understand. And so I'd like to reach out more with that and have a Voices of Station North project that I'm with at City Paper that I'm able to push forward and give people a chance that they can write to me at the paper. We can set up meetings, right, and things like that. But it's needs so many more layers for the story.
I think the City Paper, by the way, you all are doing some really great work. This is the really important stuff that's coming out of the City Paper these days. I think it's a good thing to see. Umberto in Old Goucher, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Nice show, Mark.
Thank you.
I live in Old Goucher for the past 2.5 years.
Oh, good.
I'm relatively a new resident there. One of the concerns, sorry about the show, I got to put my seatbelt on. one of my concerns is the methadone clinics, Mark, and everybody there in the panel. It's hair-raising. I lived there, like I said, for 2.5 years, and for 2.5 years that I lived there, I've seen people do just about anything from going to the bathroom on the outside to just pass out on people's tubes and not give a darn of what's going on around them.
You're talking about the methadone clinic on Charles Street?
On Charles Street, on Maryland Avenue, there are about 12 of them.
Yeah,
Some of them legal and some of them not, if you
right.
know what I mean.
Yeah, I do know what you mean, exactly.
Is there anything going to be done about that? That's my main worry. I mean, I'm a renter right now, and I love to buy.
No, it's a great question, Umberto. So, you know anything about this, Ben?
Sure, yeah. It's a complicated issue, and there's all kinds of laws that need to be followed when dealing with this. But there are quite a few people who share his concerns. And there's a new task force being run through the Central Baltimore Partnership that includes a lot of people in Old Goucher and Charles North and the areas that are really inundated with methadone clinics, not necessarily to remove them, but to work with them and make them more a part of the community like we're trying to do with everyone else. And it certainly is. The way in which they're being managed in many ways is rather problematic for residents and businesses in that area. And I think it's something that over time we can address.
Yeah, I mean, then there's the whole issue around methadone, period.
But I hate it, though.
That's a different conversation.
Yeah. That's a long conversation.
We've done also on the show over the years on the kinds of treatment we need to help people who are addicted who want to get help, but be that another day.
Enough said, right?
Enough said. Do this another day.
For now.
So let's get some closing thoughts. Where do we go from here?
I mean, there's a lot of things that have happened even since. I mean, one of the interesting things is that we haven't really talked about are the warehouse spaces that were somewhat questionable in their legal standing with the city, and that the city really trying to work with those spaces has been an interesting development, and more of them are sort of going legitimate. The Bell Foundry is raising money to make everything be up to code. Load of Fun, of course, was voluntarily shut down several months ago when someone called and they weren't zoned correctly. And so all of these spaces that had been existing that the artists were living in, and then the big news of Charlie Langford really trying to preserve what Copycat is, that's something that we didn't get to touch on a lot today, but I think it's an important part of what's happening is all of these low rent work live spaces, and the ability to keep that going is going to be one of the big questions as well.
And that has to do, I think, with how you zone things, how you deal with property taxes, how you allow people to live. I mean, that's a huge question to hear about that. You did raise that in the article, and we'll get to that at the next one.
I think Michelle raised the interesting question of what are the small steps, right? What are some of the small steps that we can take to start these conversations? And I think a really great small step to start the conversation with the folks in the high-rise building would be, for example, the fact that I hear a rumor that there might be a possibility of a mural project on that building. Is that something where we can actually have a conversation with the residents and try and actually have a participatory process to figure out what goes on that building? Wonderful. That would be an amazing way to start a conversation.
You never know how many senior citizen artists are lurking in that building waiting to participate in a project like that, right?
And you can also, with projects when it comes with visual arts. You can also incorporate performance art, especially poetry. We do a lot of shows where we incorporate visual art and poets writing to the work and things like that. So if you got a poet and an artist together during the mural project and got them working together, and now you have the, you know what I mean, the audio with the visual, I think that also will stir up a lot of conversation as well.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm leaving here to go have a conversation about that mural project later
awesome.
Today.
So we'll
all right, all right.
It's not happening tomorrow, but hopefully sometime soon.
Okay.
Right. I'm sorry.
I was going to say one other final closing thought. Is that I was a little bit worried coming on that there would be the, you know, the usual question. What does Stationworth need? What's the one thing that's going to fix everything? And
There is no one thing.
Right. I hate answering. I'm really glad you didn't ask that and no one asked that because it is a lot of different people and a lot of different approaches. And it's important to remember that Station North is an arts district, but it was something long before that, and it's still many other things now. It's a commuter neighborhood. It's a working-class neighborhood. It's a, you know, it's many different things, probably the most layered neighborhood in Baltimore, as far as I can tell, in terms of the universities and just the different kinds of people living there. So it's important to really remember all the different layers and give them all credit.
So back to the title of the article that we're talking about today, and can Station North save the city? Of course not. Can Station North save Station North? It's the only thing that can. Hmm. And the other thing I'd just like to plug, that we're looking for places to do showings of the Gentrification Not movie and have conversations. So if anybody's interested in booking something like that, please contact us at Gen Not Movie, GENKNOT Movie, at gmail.com.
I have an idea.
Go for it.
Why don't you see if you can make a negotiation to kind of put it in one of the blank walls, like in the parking lot across from Charles, mm-hmm. or some other place, so this community can come out and watch the movie together.
That's a great idea,
and
Mark.
And sit outside in the evening on the summer day,
mm-hmm.
get some sangria across the street.
Anybody have any ideas on how to make that happen? Let me know.
Let's just throw that out there. So I want to thank all five of you for being here in the studio. Thank you so much for being part of the conversation.
Thanks for doing this.
Dana, thanks for writing the article.
Oh, thanks a million.
City Paper.
You're welcome.
Jude, thanks for being the community activist and out there always raising the stir, which you need to raise. Kate, Red Emmas, good to have you here. Michelle Angelette, one of my favorite folks, good to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. And Ben Stone, thank you so much for the work you're doing as well. Good to have you here
thanks
as well.
Thanks for having me.
That was an archive edition of The Mark Steiner Show from July 2013. One of the guests on the program, filmmaker Jude Lombardi, has a screening of her film Gentrification Not, KNOT, on Tuesday, February the 18th at 7:30 p.m. at Red Emma's Bookstore and Coffee House in the Free School Classroom. Her film looks at the many issues we discussed over the course of this past hour and more. More information can be had at redemmas.org. And thanks for listening. Going out today with another one of UB Blake's most famous songs, Love Will Find a Way. Happy birthday, Yubi. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. To hear this show again, podcast past shows, and find out information about our guests and the work they do, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And you can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.